Today I'll talk a bit about. I'll also give an overview of mobile development in 2021 and mention a bit about some, but not all, MyMoleste and other efforts in this ecosystem of mobile operating systems. There's quite a few, not all are open source, so I won't deal with them, and I also won't be mentioning a few interesting ones, but not very wide in the sense of having a community or something. They're more like niche projects. Anyway, in the whole operating system space of mobile phones, there it's a Linux-based ecosystem. Most of them run some kind of Linux. The exception is iPhones, which runs maybe a proprietary kernel developed by Apple, but everything else basically runs Linux. I haven't seen any devices in the wild running BSD or something. There might be, but it's not being communicated enough to be mainstream. The effort today is about a dozen operating systems which are being developed, and in the next few slides I will mention maybe seven or eight of them, just as a general overview. Device support is kind of bad because manufacturers are usually from Asia, and they take some old kernels, maybe like even a few years old, and they are called vendor kernels. They are not mainline kernels. A mainline kernel is the source code you can download from kernel.org, and it's being developed constantly through mailing lists and things, but manufacturers maintain their own forks, and this is quite bad for support. So many Android phones just work with a certain kernel because nobody did the effort to port it to mainline. The manufacturers aren't interested in this because for them they prefer their phones to be locked rather than just being a completely mainline Linux. Some of these devices have been mainlined, but it's mostly done on a best effort basis, and usually it's only if there is personal interest, like somebody has a Nexus phone or something, and they want to mainline it for themselves. And the other thing is maybe somebody does it for money, so you could maybe get a grant or something to port a phone to mainline Linux. It's kind of changing these last few months. There is more effort into this, so I'm looking forward to see what will happen. Maybe in the next year or two, there might be nice changes in this ecosystem. Mostly because of new manufacturers trying to be more open source and more welcoming to developers, which is a nice change to the existing people. The first one I want to mention is of course Android. It's the most widespread mobile OS based on Linux. Contrary to popular thinking, it's not really developed by Google. It's sponsored by Google, but it's a consortium of developers called the Open Handset Alliance. Android is by default completely open source. The thing is, vendors and Google implement their proprietary stuff on top. So you have a nice base system which is free and open source, called the Android Open Source Project, but most of these apps and any kind of useful utility becomes proprietary in one way or another. Android is often taken as an inspiration for other distributions, so when you see many of these alternatives, they mostly have the same interface, the same methodology as Android. So you have this home screen and you have a launcher and you switch apps, and it's most of them, unlike Maemo, most of them are just like focused on having one app in the foreground and being able to use just one and then switching between them. Android could be blamed for bad support, but it's not directly Google's fault in my opinion, because it comes back to these vendors who just make it work on their device and then they don't care about anybody else. Another effort is Loon OS, which is based on WebOS. WebOS was an operating system developed by LG and HP, like Hewlett-Packard. It was made for smart TVs and LG televisions. And then Loon OS rebuilt this from scratch and is now providing an open source Qt5 user interface. It looks much like Android. You can see all of these probably on Wikipedia or somewhere to find out more about them. Loon OS uses Qt5 for the interface, and it mostly looks like Android. And to boot, they have this minimal Android system image, which makes it work on many devices. But the thing is, they're still then stuck with vendor kernels and proprietary 3D drivers and stuff. Next up is PureOS. It's developed by an American company called Purism. They also manufacture their own hardware. Recently they put out a device called the Libre M5. It's quite similar to the Pine phone, developed by Pine64, and it has the same good stuff and the same bad stuff, for example, like battery life and things. They developed Foch as their user interface, and it's basically the GNOME mobile shell with some tweaks. So yeah, basically how GNOME looks like on phones is what Purism is using. Next is Postmarket OS. This one is developed by a community in Europe. They often also visit FOSDEM, and we worked together. We do work together on some things and share our efforts. Postmarket OS is like a meta distribution in the sense they don't have their own user interface, but rather they have this base system and a bootstrapping system, so you can use many different user interfaces and desktop environments on a Postmarket OS phone. And Postmarket OS also supports maybe 100 or 200 different devices, but also in the same sense of vendor kernels and proprietary 3D drivers and some shims that allow you to use Android libraries to make stuff work, which is again not ideal. Further on there is Sailfish. Sailfish is also a free and open source operating system. It's a continuation of MeeGo, which was developed by Nokia and Intel after Maemo, after Nokia abandoned Maemo. And MeeGo is in turn based on Mare. Mare was an open source effort to make it completely non-proprietary. But unfortunately, also being stuck with these devices, you end up needing proprietary libraries and firmware and stuff. I'm not saying that Maemo is an exception, but we are trying to avoid this. Jolla is the company that develops Sailfish, and they have said that they want to be completely free and open source eventually. And it's happening, it's an active development, but it takes time to get there. Parallel to Sailfish, there is Nemo. Nemo Mobile is a community effort to liberate Sailfish. So they replaced their proprietary user interface with their own, and it's also a nice effort to diverse this whole ecosystem. There is also UbiPorts, which is Ubuntu Touch. This was started by Canonical, which is like the owner, the company behind Ubuntu. But they have since abandoned it, and now it's developed by UbiPorts and the Ubuntu community. UbiPorts is just a legal entity for the, for this community. They're mostly free and open source, and interestingly enough, they use also some backend parts of MIMO and MIGO. Some for modem interfacing, some for driver loading and internet connectivity. And lastly, the topic of this talk is MIMO Leste, which is something I've been working on for the past 4 years. It's for now it's completely community driven. It's we decided to continue the MIMO Fremantle, which was developed in 2009 by Nokia. They abandoned it, I think, in 2013, and since then it was they they delegated their entire copyright to resources and their open source code to the community. There is a foundation in Germany that now owns this, and we were also given permission just to use and even relicense everything to GPL and similar licenses. We try to be mostly free and open source, and all of our user space is. There is nothing that we developed that is proprietary, but we still do have to use some proprietary things like modem firmware at some cases, in some cases firmware for Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, and the 3D graphics drivers are also often proprietary on devices we use. We have our own desktop interface, which is called Hilden, and you can see how it looks like in this short video on that I just posted on IRC. It's based on GTK2, but there is also GTK3 and Qt5 things that we developed, and we hopefully will move to GTK3 sometime this year, or maybe next year. It's not a priority because everything works, but eventually it would be nice to keep up to date. As to what's happened with MIMO Leste so far, we picked up the open source work from Nokia after they delegated it to the community, and for the last 4 years we've been we have daily activity on free and open source development, and we have been reverse engineering all proprietary parts from MIMO Fremantle. We mostly use IDA Pro to decompile and rewrite this whole things. So I think maybe 45 to 50% of MIMO was proprietary, and then we managed to reverse engineer it. Currently, we support 8 devices. There is the Nokia N900. There is a couple of Motorola phones. There is the Pine phone. There is the Pine Tab. And there is also a few interesting devices coming out. And people from the community also managed to port MIMO to their own devices. We use mainline Linux everywhere. We don't depend on these vendor kernels that come from the Android ecosystem. The reason for this is so we can do maintenance easily, and we can just keep our kernels secure and up to date just by going to kernel.org and compiling a new one, rather than having to maintain a separate fork. And we also manage to contribute to the Linux kernel often. So you can also, if you look at the source code, you will see many mentions of MIMO and what has happened because of us in the Linux kernel. For the near future of MIMO, we plan to make graphical interfaces for calls and SMS. Currently, we just support them through the command line, but we're very happy that they actually work. But yeah, it's the missing graphical interfaces that are now our top priority. Further on, we want to make kind of networks, network providers. So, for example, you can connect to 3G or Wi-Fi, and then you can have another layer of a connection on top of it. So you could have you have a graphical interface to connect your phone to Tor or WireGuard or OpenVPN or whatever, and it's just transparent for the user. It's just a simple API that we've developed. We also want to finish our address book reverse engineering, and we want to use telepathy to implement various communication protocols, and then we can connect it with all these graphical interfaces. So, for example, when the address book is done, you can have all your contacts, whether it's mobile phones, whether it's I don't know, Signal, whether it's WhatsApp, whether it's IRC, you can have everything in the same contact book. And then you can use a graphical interface for all of these protocols and have it all in one interface. You don't need random apps to communicate over a protocol. Rather, you could just install a plugin or a library, and it should allow you to use a certain protocol. I think this is a major UI change from the usual standard, I would say. Having all of these protocols in one interface is nicer, and users often don't even want to care about what protocol they're using. They just want to send a message from one place to the other. And yeah, you don't have to download proprietary apps or something. It's nice. As a general feature for MIMO, what's interesting and what we plan is to become influential to hardware manufacturers. We want this to be an effort and call to arms, basically, to how would I put it? So hardware manufacturers start thinking about mainline Linux and enabling other distributions than Android to work on their phones, and it's a win-win for both. The manufacturers could get more adoption, they would be able to make more money, and open source communities would just accept their devices and promote them. We also want to make a non-profit foundation so we can assign actual copyright to us, and so we can receive donations. We could also become more sustainable with this, because currently we are just people developing. We don't have any legal entity behind us, but when you're in a big project like this, stuff is bound to happen, so we are better off being safe and having some foundation behind us. And with our efforts, of course, we hope to just be able to support more devices in the future. Hopefully, yeah, hardware manufacturers listen to us. We often talk about this need to have a completely open source stack, and maybe it will happen. I feel that it's changing, and companies like Pine64 now have made the Pine phone, which is completely open source. It's an amazing effort. With all its bugs and problems, it's still great to have a smartphone that's like current hardware, not hardware from 10 years ago. For MIMO, what happened since last year? There's a lot, like every year, because daily active development. More and more people are coming in, and more and more people are contributing. We're doing a lot of reverse engineering with IDA. Unfortunately, it is a proprietary program, but we managed to run it in VMs, and it's very useful for us to reverse engineer existing parts of MIMO Fremantle that were proprietary. So what we managed to finish was the entire GPS stack. We've reverse engineered libraries that use GPS. GPS is usually in the modem, so you need some kind of user space to talk to the modem. And all of DLAT's libraries were liberated and are now licensed with the GPL3. We also reverse engineered various applets. Applets are kind of like shared libraries that are in the control panel, so you have these for setting up your 3G access. You have these for setting up your Wi-Fi or time zone or any settings you might want to change in the UI. Most of these were proprietary, made by Nokia, but now we managed to have them reverse engineered. We ported a lot of software. MIMO had a lot of native apps before, but they were Qt4, or they used some libraries that are unavailable these days. Some projects just died, and then you have to port this software to some alternative or something. This includes like PDF readers, RSS readers, calendars, calculators, games, a lot of games. We have this mode control entity. It's a central daemon used for power management and device state. It was also reverse engineered from a proprietary binary, and we use it to manage the power usage. We use it to interface with hardware on the device, like accelerometers, so you can rotate your phone in portrait mode or landscape mode, and or for example, when you turn off your screen, it's going to maybe unload some modules, so you bring your device to some idle mode where it uses less power, and this brings you more battery life. Or for example, if your battery life is really low, it might start unloading some less important things, so you are still able to make an emergency call and potentially save yours or somebody else's life. These are I think very important aspects to a phone, which often developers forget. So there is a few operating systems that just don't care about this, and MIMO is one of the distributions that thinks about this. It's not just about getting Linux to run on your phone. It's about having an actual device that's useful, it's not having just a desktop environment that looks nice. As to more things, we moved completely to Pulse Audio and ALSA UCM files. This is kind of funny when people from the side look at it, and they are mainly in their world of minimalism and not using like bloated software. But in the case of mobile development, Pulse Audio isn't really bloat. It brings you proper audio control. It brings you control. It brings you use case switching. So, for example, you could listen to music on one speaker on the phone, and then you magically can switch to the other speaker when you're making a call, or you can connect headphones and you can still use your speaker and headphones at the same time, or you can play music and use a Bluetooth headset to do a call while still having the music playing on your phone. So this is impossible to do with plain ALSA, because it just takes too much effort, and Pulse Audio just magically does this. Also, when it comes to ALSA, plain ALSA, most of these devices have more than 60 mixer entries. So when you open ALSA mixer or something, you never can find something you need to switch on manually. But with Pulse, this is completely transparent, and then you can make user interfaces that just use Pulse to change this as you expect to as a user. Later on, we found out about Pipewire, which is also an effort to re-implement this stack once again, but it actually looks nice, and some people from the community recommended us to look into it. So maybe we will switch to this. Supposedly, it can also just use everything that Pulse uses, and there is no need for any kind of big porting. As to screens and user interfaces and 3D, we managed to run the latest PowerVR driver on mainline Linux. PowerVR is a 3D driver and a GPU developed by Imagination Technologies, like Texas Instruments. Maybe you know about them. This was the most often used and most famous GPU back then. So let's say from 2009 to 2014, most devices used PowerVR GPUs, and it was very, very popular. But the problem is, it's completely proprietary, and there is no datasheet. At some point, there was a leak of this entire source code, but the problem with copyright and stuff is you mustn't read the source code, because then if you try to re-implement an open source driver, then you get into trouble because of stolen intellectual property or something. For this, it would be better to just be living in China, where they don't care about this, but since we are in Europe, we could get potentially in a lot of trouble if we just try to copy from the source code leak. Having this running, we discovered also bugs in Xorg, in the Glamour driver. We managed to write some patches. We did send them their way, but unfortunately, Xorg developers are kind of stagnant now. All of them just shifted focus to Wayland, and most of the other efforts I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, they use Wayland, so we're one of the rare ones still using Xorg. We've tried to implement some shim that helps with this, but we are not yet at the state. So yeah, maybe if somebody knows somebody from Xorg, could be useful to get in touch with me to maybe get these patches merged. For now, we are just maintaining a fork of Xorg. For some community stuff, the PinePhone and PineTab have been released since last year. They're very amazing efforts, and finally there is some community hardware that's being made. And it's a change to the whole ecosystem. It's not, again, some Samsung or LG or big conglomerate that builds these phones in their huge offices. It's rather just a community effort to make some devices. They're also developing a hardware keyboard, and since MyMolesta is basically a hardware an operating system focused on having a hardware keyboard, it's going to make the PinePhone being much nicer to use with Lester. Not to say that it's impossible to use it without a keyboard, but it's difficult to type into terminals and do stuff with an on-screen keyboard. The PinePhone and PineTab, I would say, there are still devices that are just for early adopters. They still have some bugs. And battery life is quite bad when you use it. So maybe you get 3 to 5 hours of usage. But hopefully this will change in another version, in another future version of the PinePhone when this is all figured out. Now it's just at the point where a lot of development on the kernel is happening, and this research can be used to make a better device in the future. And the Purism's LibreM phone suffers from these same problems and was also delayed many times because of this. We managed to get also another grant for further research and development, but as it often happens with these grants, people do like academic research and make like big papers that you can also find on BitHub, but we will rather just use this money to do actual work and write some more documentation for my MO. I think it's a nice, these grants are a nice way to sustain ourselves because we don't have any corporate sponsorship or something. Maybe this changes with the foundation, but of course we won't move away from the whole open source effort. It will, MIMO will always remain at least a GPL3 or some form of open source. I will also talk about a bit about it, the generals of how a mobile operating system looks like and what it basically is. It comprises of many different parts that need to work together, and you start from the basics and then you move up to a graphical interface, and finally you end up in just developing apps, which is the state Android is in now. They have a team that still of course works on the hardware side and on the lower level, but most of Android's development is now focused on the user interface. So when you're developing an operating system, you pick a device, you pick some phone, and you need to get it booting. So the first step is to have a bootloader. So this could be U-boot, this could be KXXBoot, this could be even Grub in some cases. U-boot is used, for example, on the Nokia N900. It's used on the PinePhone. It's used on many ARM devices nowadays. Basically, it's a binary that has some logic to boot, to turn on the screen and to make output on the screen and to read either internal memory or an SD card, and then it executes a kernel. KXXBoot is something similar, but also in a case it's really weird. For example, the Motorola Droid 4 uses this, and KXXBoot is basically also kind of a microkernel that boots one vendor kernel that's on the Droid, and then this Droid kernel does KXX into a mainline Linux, and then it makes MIMO boot. Okay, so once you have this bootloader working, then you move on to the Linux kernel. You need to write a device tree, you pick up an existing device tree, and there you input information about your hardware. So, for example, the screen refresh rates, the frequencies it has to work on. It's very low level, and if you write the device tree wrong, you could potentially also make your phone die or overheat or something. It's also important to get this right, but you do this by testing, of course. In the ideal way, it should be mainline Linux, so you can have easy support, you can do maintenance, you can keep it up to date, and obviously you can also then ask for help on the mailing lists. If you just pick a random vendor kernel, it's nobody supports this, and then you're stuck. So another point for having a mainline-based kernel. After you have the bootloader and the Linux kernel, you need to work on the backend user space and daemons. So this means, along with the kernel, you need some programs that do power management, so you need some programs that manage the hardware state. For example, figuring out if the keyboard is open, figuring out if you have low battery, or your screen is off or on, or you connected to Wi-Fi, and many, many things. So in MIMO, we have a central daemon taking care of this, and then it uses inter-process communication to talk to other daemons and user space. Also, parts of this backends are idling and loading and unloading modules that you need. Phones are very different to computers in a sense that you are they're much lower power usually. So MIMO can run in 128 megabytes of RAM because we do a lot of this dynamic management. You can't, Android doesn't really do this. They also force you to buy a more powerful phone every year, but we are more about recycling and being able to run everywhere, not just the latest and greatest phones. And also this user space implies interfacing with the modem. So for calls or data connection or GPS, you need to use the modem. The modem is usually a black box in a way that vendors don't give out data sheets online, so you don't know what commands you need to talk to the modem. You don't know how to get it on or off, or in a way to, oh, sorry, I'm trying to put my words together. You often don't know how to interface with it using some commands and process communication. So what we try is to also reuse some software that was written by Intel called Ofono, which is a daemon that kind of tries to standardize this communication. And then Ofono contains different logic for different modems that are supported. Not always all modems are supported, but it's an active project, so modems keep getting added into it. Once you have, so you have the bootloader, Linux kernel, and the backend user space. Now, let's say you have a base for your operating system. So things work, you can use the terminal, you manage to connect to Wi-Fi and do development. Then you move to front-end. So the front-end is basically a desktop environment. You need something, some graphical interface to show to the user. Your user needs to be able to use the device, touch the screen, or input text. You need some libraries for integration, so you have these backend daemons that control your Wi-Fi, your mobile data, your screen. So you need a way to, you need some form of API, and you provide this in you provide this with libraries. So, for example, you can have a lock screen that uses some Xorg library to actually lock the screen, and you have some applet that can change the volume. If you press the volume keys, the volume goes up and down. Or you can have a graphical interface for connecting to Wi-Fi. For example, you can make in the backend you can make a scan, and then you can present this to the user in some tree, and then the user can pick any of these Wi-Fi connections. Input the password, and then this interface again talks to the backend and to WPA supplicant, and then magic happens. When you talk about this, it sometimes sounds abstract, but the problem is most people don't really know how a phone works. So everyone imagines like, oh, why don't you have this? Why don't you have that? The problem is it's not really easy to just install some app and expect everything to work. You need to integrate this in some sense. After you have this base, let's call it the desktop environment, like, this is what you have basically by installing MyMolestia now on a supported device. It's a bare bones system. Then you just come to this sense of making apps. So you now are able to include different web browsers, terminal emulators, Gopher clients, navigation, communication protocols like messaging systems or IRC clients or whatever. Basically, any kind of app that you want should now be able to run on your operating system. When it comes to the community side of developing an OS, it's It's something that I've learned throughout these past 4 years, and in these slides, it's very much abstract, but I'll try to explain it well. It's important to often communicate your progress to the community and to the outside world. If you're just doing development and being stuck in some echo chamber of not even listening to your users, your project dies. So you need to communicate this progress, whether it's just by posting blog updates or giving talks or sharing things on social networks, or even just having your source code on GitHub helps. It's just a way to share your project, to make it more visible. And sometimes it's important to take these compromises, otherwise you don't attract new people and your project just dies. It's also important to incentivize developers. So when you have a big operating system, people can work on various things. So somebody can work on the back end, somebody can work on the front end, somebody can write support for a new device, or if you're not interested in this, you can just make some new apps or port some existing apps. Also, for incentivizing, it's useful to give out maybe some of these devices to people, and then they get interested in using it. For example, I've recently also sent one of these devices to Evil Bob, and then he managed to improve S-Feed, so it performs better on devices with small screens and touch screens. It's also important to write good code, clean, readable code, and be welcoming to people. If you have some weird Java code base, then you also won't attract many developers. You just attract developers that know Java. So my MO for this is based on C, and 90% C. There's some C++ and there's some Python, but it's mostly C. When you have your source code on GitHub, then it's very important to be attentive to pull requests. People often contribute, and you always accept these pull requests in one way or another. You either request changes, or you just accept the pull requests, and if it's correct, great. If it's not completely correct, you take it nevertheless and fix it and improve it. It's also important to help people out and teach them how to do this stuff. So either workshops or some online documentation is also helpful. And when people want to contribute and they're not sure how, you should be there to help them out. And obviously, it's important to keep moving forward. So you shouldn't be stuck on the same program for a week or two or or even a month. You should parallelize your work and do as much as possible, not really caring much about breaking things and cleaning up your code to be perfect. It's different than having a single code base. Another important thing is translations. So if you're just doing development in English, you are kind of locked down to people who speak English. But if you have your system translated in different languages, then of course you can accept some other contributions. So Memo is now translated into 40 languages, and this means 40 different languages. Language speakers can contribute to us. They don't necessarily have to know English. I think this is very helpful, and it also provides a way to spread. To spread the knowledge of MIMO existing and to be there at some place in the world. To talk a bit about goals and what an operating system is, You need to remember that it's not a single code base. It's not a program that you just maintain forever and clean it up and accept some patches. It's made out of many, many, many different programs. For example, MIMO now has more than 300 different pieces of software. And the thing is, there's a few of us, but of course, it's a huge effort. So sometimes things can be buggy, especially when you reverse engineer them. But the point is to enable people to work. So some code may be ugly, some code may be hard to read, but you get there at some point. And the thing is, when you have a base system, then you attract more people, and eventually somebody will come and decide to clean this up. This has already happened with a few programs, and it's happening. So, you don't always have to have to clean up a complete program before you publish it or something. You can implement a couple of features and push it into the system, and then you enable somebody to work on something else. Yeah. There's a few resources if you're interested in MIMO. There is our wiki page on less-than-mimo.org. Most of our code base is on this GitHub page. There we have three other also GitHub pages, and one of them is also for the community. So if you have some program that you would like to see in MIMO, you can ask us, and it then becomes an app in MIMO. So you can, for example, with SFeed, we have the SFeed app. It's part of our extras. So you have this application manager, and then you can scroll or search, and then you can install SFeed by clicking a button. Lastly, there is also our IRC channel. We recently moved from Linode to LiberaChat. There's about 70 people there. Maybe half of them are active. It's a good team, I would say. We managed to contribute to many projects. We upstream stuff very often, as much as we can, and people help us out. Even if they're not part of MIMO or something, people are always welcoming when we ask them to teach us or help us, or even to lobby some upstreaming work. Yeah. Okay. That's it for this time. And maybe next year, I will also give you an even bigger update. And this year might be a big changer, since we will be getting graphical interfaces for phone calls and for SMS and different communication protocols. I think this will incentivize more people to use MIMO. And it will actually be usable as a daily phone. Yep. Thanks for listening. And if you have any questions, post them on IRC. I will check now and answer what I can.